This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
coming up, environmentalists in Kenya pledge to take legal action if Kenyan and Chinese corporations move forward with construction of a railway bridge across Nairobi National Park. And the United Nations says four of its peacekeepers were killed yesterday when their vehicle ran over a mine in central Mali.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, environmental activists in Kenya have pledged to take further legal action against Kenyan and Chinese corporations if contractors move forward with construction of a railway bridge across Nairobi National Park. The activists held a demonstration today outside Parliament. Rael Ambor reports from Nairobi.
About 100 activists chanted as they marched through the streets of Nairobi Thursday to demand that phase two of construction of the Standard Gauge Railway be rerouted around Nairobi National Park. The park is a rare wildlife sanctuary located just minutes from the city center of one of Africa's rapidly growing economic and technological hubs.
This is a tiny park. It's an absolute jewel to the Nairobi citizens, the whole of Kenya. It's crowded with guests. You know, everybody who comes on safari, their first stop is Nairobi National Park before they go to the Mara and all those places. And it's a disaster if they take it away.
The 6-kilometer bridge planned to cross over the park is part of a much larger project, the SGR, a massive regional rail network largely funded by China. Kenya opened the Nairobi to Mombasa line last year. This second phase of the SGR in Kenya is set to connect Nairobi to Naivasha. Environmentalists said the construction would affect the ecology of the park, endangering the wildlife and their natural habitats. Paul Mark from Friends of Nairobi National Park read a petition outside Parliament.
The purpose of this letter is to remind you of the court orders in place which stop the Kenya Railway Corporation and any other person from construction of the Standard Gauge Railway, the SGR, within the Nairobi National Park.
In 2017, the National Environmental Tribunal ordered a temporary halt to construction in the Nairobi National Park in response to a petition from environmental groups. The activists demanded the government conduct an environmental impact study. The case is still pending. However, Kenya Railways, a state company, and its partner, the China Road and Bridge Corporation, moved to begin construction work in the park in late February. The Kenya Coalition for Wildlife Conservation and Management said in a statement Thursday that it will seek to have the contractors held in contempt. Officials at the Kenya's Ministry of Transport and Kenya Railways did not respond to VOA's request for comment. Marco Prichma sits on the board of Friends of Nairobi National Park.
Nairobi National Park is an open park, which means animals can migrate freely in and out at the southern boundaries of the park. If there's going to be a lot of noise because of construction in certain areas, you will see certain animals will move out of that particular area, go to another area, pushing out other animals. And they might go out of the park, causing extra human-wildlife conflict outside the park.
Last year, environmentalists unsuccessfully tried to stop construction of Phase 1 of the SGR, which passes through Tsavo National Park. Activists say the rail line interferes with elephant migration. A total of 7 possible routes were considered for Phase 2 of the SGR, 2 of which did not pass through the national park. The government said the current design was picked as the most cost-effective and technically feasible. The Kenya Wildlife Service also rubber-stamped the decision to build the rail bridge over the park, saying it would have minimal interference with the movement of wildlife. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Officials from countries that contribute to AMISOM, the African Union force in Somalia, are meeting this week in Uganda to discuss a transitional security plan for the troubled country. While AMISOM has made gains in Somalia, the risks still presented by militant group Al-Shabaab remain vivid due to inadequate funding and troop numbers. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Over the past few years, AMISOM has pushed Al-Shabaab away from major cities, and the federal government of Somalia has taken steps towards stability. With foreign help, the Somali security forces have grown stronger, and political leaders are aiming to hold nationwide elections in 2020. These gains, however, are being undermined by inadequate troop numbers and lack of predictable and sustainable funding to fight Al-Shabaab and a small faction of Islamic State fighters in the north. The five AMISOM countries are planning to start a drawdown of their troops in Somalia this year and withdraw all of them by the end of 2020. Ugandan Foreign Affairs Minister Sam Kutesa says it is essential that the Somali government intensify its effort to provide security for its people.
It is crucial that the drawdown of AMISOM is synchronized with the corresponding strengthening of Somali security forces. The failure to carefully manage this process could imperil the political and security gains already made.
The ministers and defense officials meeting in Kampala say Somalis also have to make progress in settling internal political disputes, including tensions among clans and the periodic clashes between the forces of Puntland and Somaliland. These are political issues that AMISOM has no mandate to handle, yet they stand to undermine the little peace and stability already gained. The troop-contributing countries are also seeking support from key financial institutions such as the World Bank and African Development Bank. Smail Chagui, the African Union Commissioner for Peace and Security, notes that resource concerns could sink the fight against Al-Shabaab.
More broadly, AMISOM will need to continue to enhance its operational effectiveness. Our operational imperative of degrading Al-Shabaab requires that we maintain an offensive and not defensive posture and the requisite configuration to allow for that.
The AMISOM talks open Friday in Kampala. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
It is crucial that the drawdown of AMISOM is synchronized with the corresponding strengthening of Somali security forces. The failure to carefully manage this process could imperil the political and security gains already made.
Anti-corruption watchdog Transparency International says the Nigerian government is not doing enough to fight graft and mismanagement. The group's recently released its annual Corruption Perceptions Index. It said that Nigeria ranked among the bottom of the list as number 148 out of 180. Many analysts say the report is an embarrassment for the federal government. It comes after a report showing that corruption in Nigeria could cost up to 37% of GDP by 2030 if it's not dealt with. Ikalzor Akoawe is a public affairs analyst and former first vice chairman of the Nigerian Bar Association. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye on the failings of the Buhari administration in the fight against corruption and strategies to use in curbing it.
The Buhari administration, which predicated its campaign for power and fighting corruption, should have a report card after 3 years in office from Transparency International, that corruption in Nigeria is actually worse. I think the reason for this, and I believe entirely with what Transparency International said, the reason for this, I believe, is that President Buhari is a one-man army. His lieutenants, those who work with him, have not bought into his anti-corruption vision. His party, the vehicle through which he came to power, is a recent contraption made up of disgruntled ex-members of the PDP, which was in power and whose hallmark and characteristic was corruption. So when you now have a party where perhaps as much as 50% of the key members were members of the very corrupt former governing party, PDP, you have a problem on your hands. So President Buhari is a one-man army. He believes very much in the fight against corruption. I believe his vice president, Oshibajo, also believes in it. But after two of them, who else believes in it? Who in the Senate? Who in the Federal House of Reps? Who among his ministers? Who among his advisors? So he's not been able to articulate a coherent vision which all his party members buy into. But if Buhari had, as soon as he came into office, if he had been able to sack, for example, his chief, the secretary to the government of the Federation, who took so many months for them to even ease him out of office. If the moment corruption matters emerge, he was able to deal decisively with members of his party and his government, more people will have keyed into it.
In a successful strategy to curb corruption, what are the most important steps? And has the Buhari administration taken those steps?
The most important step, I believe, is in-house cleaning. Physician, heal thyself. And Buhari's administration has been unable to address the issue of the Chief of Army Staff, General Yusuf Buratai, who is believed and has been accused of owning extensive property in Dubai, and who says he made his money through snake rearing. And there was need for there to be more exposure of his resources from snake rearing. You have the Chief of Staff, Abakiari, who has also been accused of having been involved in some bribe to do with MTN, receiving a bribe. Of course, the Secretary to the Government of the Federation, who is believed to have embezzled money meant for the internally displaced camps. So when you go on and on and on, the fact that the government of Buhari has been accused, there's been allegations against members of his government, he's not been able to deal decisively, is the problem.
Does a successful strategy go after all forms of corruption, even small-time corruption, or is it better to focus strictly on one sector, like the extremely important oil sector?
Yes, for effective battle against corruption, there's need to be selective. Select a sector, face the sector, clean out the sector, and the message will be sent to the other sectors. I think if you want corruption to be solved in Nigeria, one major area to face is the judiciary. Cases take too long. I just read last week in the papers that Chimaruke Namani has been finally discharged and acquitted of corruption charges which commenced against him about 2007. It's a shame. There is no motivation against corruption when people are not convicted on time or discharged on time. And the solution is you have to quadruple the number of judges and magistrates. You can't have 15 judges in the state. You need to have 60, 100 of them. So cases can start and finish in 2 years. That is a major reason the anti-corruption fight is not being won.
That was Ikauzor Akoryaiwe, a public affairs analyst and former first vice chairman of the Nigerian Bar Association. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye from Enugu, southern Nigeria.
The United Nations says 4 of its peacekeepers were killed yesterday when their vehicle ran over a mine in central Mali. The mission, known by its acronym MINUSMA, said the 4 soldiers were traveling between Boni and Duenza in the Mopti region. 4 other peacekeepers were seriously injured. 6 Malian soldiers were killed on Tuesday in the same region in an identical incident. UN spokesman Stephen Dujarric said Secretary General Antonio Guterres strongly condemned the attacks on the UN peacekeepers and Malian forces, but he insisted that the cowardly acts would not deter MINUSMA's determination to accompany the Malian people in their quest for peace and stability.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Environmentalists in Kenya pledge to take legal action if Kenyan and Chinese corporations move forward with construction of a railway bridge across Nairobi National Park. Transparency International says the Nigerian government is not doing enough to fight graft and mismanagement. And the United Nations says 4 of its peacekeepers were killed yesterday when their vehicle ran over a mine in central Mali. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi said today that anyone who defames the military commits high treason. This statement comes a day after Egypt's chief prosecutor ordered his staff to closely monitor the media and start legal action against any outlet that disrupts security or hurts national interest. Also yesterday, an Egyptian court sentenced a famous singer to 6 months in prison over a joke she made about the Nile River. Egypt's military is currently running a massive operation against military forces in the Sinai. Some international analysts and critics of the al-Sisi government say the operation is too heavy-handed. However, the government says it is determined to halt the series of terrorist attacks that have hit the country over the past 4 years. Mohammed Al-Shanawi spoke with Doki Fassian, a senior Middle East program officer at Freedom House in Washington, about these latest legal developments.
It seems to be a warning shot to editors and owners of media outlets around the country ahead of the presidential elections to watch their coverage and to very carefully measure their words. There seems to be, you know, more repression coming. We know that journalists are being disappeared, and Egypt is right now one of the leading jailers of journalists in the world for the past several years. But this announcement is just an extra step, it seems, the government is taking to crush any kind of criticism or fair coverage of what's going to happen in the elections.
A court ruling sentenced Shireen Abdel Wahab, a famous Egyptian female singer, to 6 months in prison over her comments perceived as an insult to the Nile River. Could that be a reasonable cause for such punishment?
Obviously not. It's absurd, and it's really taking repression in Egypt to such an absurd level. The thought control that's implied in this type of sentence and persecution is deeply concerning and really unprecedented for Egypt. This is a joke. I think most Egyptians don't think that she did anything wrong or she meant anything by that other than talking about the Nile, which belongs to all Egyptians. So it's very curious as to why the government is taking this sort of step. One way of looking at it is, you know, Egypt is involved in a water dispute with Ethiopia over rights to the Nile as Ethiopia is building a dam, and, you know, Egypt is to some degree coming under pressure to ensure that, you know, it maintains its rights in this process where Ethiopia is demanding more. And it could be that this is a distraction, this sort of ultra-nationalism and patriotism that is being imposed by above is sort of a distraction from potential criticism that the government is not doing enough. If we think back to the criticism the government came under in its handling of the islands transfer to Saudi Arabia, there's a level of insecurity here in terms of how the government is dealing in these international disputes. So this could just be a distraction and kind of a creation of drama in order to block that kind of criticism. But it's obviously very absurd, and I hope that the appeals court overturns it.
How does Freedom House rank Egypt when it comes to freedom of expression?
Egypt has not ranked very highly, obviously, and it's actually gotten worse over the years. And it is, you know, like I said earlier, it does get one of the lower scores, I think a 1 out of 4, a possible 4 top score in terms of freedom of expression. And since, you know, several years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, it's increasingly gotten worse, where, you know, independent media has been shut down, and really the only media outlets that are allowed to operate in Egypt have to toe the government line, and they're prosecuted if they do not do that. Journalists are dismissed. In the worst case scenarios, they're disappeared or they're put in prison, interrogated. So there's definitely a great deal of restrictions on freedom of expression in Egypt, and it looks like it's just getting worse.
That was Doki Fassian at Freedom House in Washington speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi.
When 22-year-old Yvonne Karanja grows up, she wants to become a land surveyor, a practice usually done by men. She's one among several other young female students pursuing geography and mathematics at Kenyatta University. At a recent gathering in Nairobi, she joined a group of other girls who met women scientists. They discussed ways to increase female participation in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, commonly referred to as STEM. Ruben Chama reports from Nairobi.
The UN's Culture and Education Agency organized the meeting between practicing women scientists and teachers and lecturers who contribute to boosting girls' participation in the STEM fields. Karanja says despite the field being a male-dominated industry, she has always wanted to work as a female scientist since her childhood.
Especially in mathematics for me, and still it has always been something I always wanted to do, especially when it came to land survey stuff in that line. We have bodies that actually assist students. Like now we are members of an association called COFEST, which is Kenyatta University Female Students in Science and Technology. Like we have the avenues to grow, mentor others, entirely grow as a person.
Another female student is Elsie Njoroge, currently in her fifth year, pursuing petroleum engineering. She says at first she had never considered a career in that field, but she has come to love it because of the excitement of discovering new things.
It's merely by accident, but it's the best mistake I ever made. So as I've been doing my research on the course, I've loved it, honestly, because it's everything that it has, everything I love that it's just that geology, chemistry, physics, geophysics. True, there is a lot of challenges, especially in my field where it's almost male-dominated, yeah. Many people think that we cannot do the work that men do. And when it comes to, like, especially the math units, people assume that we cannot do them. When it comes to field work, it's still very difficult for us because guys usually tell us to sit on the side. They don't want us to get hurt. They think we are sensitive.
The Nairobi meeting, held at the United Nations complex in Nairobi, provided an opportunity for young female scientists and students to share experiences, discuss challenges and opportunities in science for women and girls. Anne Therese Ndongjata is UNESCO Regional Director for Eastern Africa.
It's not just about a good career. Science is everyday life. Everything we do is about science. From the air we breathe, from the way we walk, the food we put on the table, it's science. Our bodies, our health, everything is science. You need to have that advanced knowledge so that together we will be able to scale up action. So it's important for everybody, but when women do not realize why they do what they do or why not something different, it's simply because they lack the knowledge.
Participants spoke about the critical role women scientists play in Africa's development. That includes greater support for gender equality, one of the UN's 17 Sustainable Development Goals. Amelia Omolo is a senior female engineer with the Kenya Airways. She says persisting gender inequality often severely limits women from achieving their potential.
Just the stereotypes, for example, being told that science is hard, physics is hard, engineering is for boys and stuff like that. Another challenge is like the engineering field, you have very few women, you have very few ladies, even in campus. We started like 24 of us, ladies in my class, and we only graduated 2 in my year. So if those are some of the challenges, as in you do not have people to push you and you don't have role models to look up to and say, when I finish, I'm going to be like so and so once done.
According to the UN, despite significant progress made globally in closing the gender gap in primary school enrollment, gender inequality prevails elsewhere. This includes in science, where women remain heavily underrepresented. Recent data from UNESCO indicates that only 28% of researchers employed in research and development globally are women. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Ruhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.